Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon? A show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community. I'll be talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick, and you're listening to another episode of Who's Reading the Organon? I was just reminded that people are listening from all parts of the world. And while it is noon on the East Coast of America, it is 9:30 p.m. in India, 7 p.m. in Egypt, and 6 p.m. in Europe. So check your clocks. We appreciate everyone who can tune in live, but remind you that the downloads are also available, and there are two places to comment, both on HWC and on Vera's personal blog page, which is linked via the internet and on HWC. So basically, we are now waiting for Vera to call in to co-host the show, and we'll see how it goes. And to remind you that there are a lot of hot topics going on the HWC network, Homeopathy World Community, Gina Tyler's blog on what's your favorite color and why do you pick certain colors has been going onto many different areas of personal connection with color in the world. And a lot of people were showing what the world would look like in black and white. And kind of drab, but, you know, there are people who do have a loss of color to their sight. Dr. Peter Kay's Homeopathic Substances Interact with the Genetic Blueprint is a very popular blog. And I would like you to take a look at Vera's Distinct Potencies personal blog. So we're just now waiting again for Vera to call in, and then we will get started. I'm hoping that you can hear me. It's kind of interesting waiting for that caller to come in. And we did start talking about aphorism 249 from the Organon, and we are going to repeat that information today. If there's anyone who is out there on the live chat, we would look forward to your comments and see what's going on there. Okay, it looks like Vera is letting me know that she is calling in right now. Can anyone hear me? So you know what? When you do a live show, you're kind of talking out into space until you get some feedback coming on and somebody comments, lets you know that the sound is going good. We don't have a technician who is working the switchboard, and therefore, we kind of are going on air. Okay, so it looks like she's here. Okay, welcome, Vera. Oops. Hello, Vera. Are you
Hi,
there?
Hi, Debbie. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're doing good.
Okay.
Okay, I introduced you and I told everyone that we had talked about aphorism number 249 yesterday, and we were ready to kind of review that one more time because we had trouble with the sound and that we don't have a third. You know what? Sometimes doing a radio show might require a third party to be the switchboard operator.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a learning curve on this, that's clear. Yesterday we were talking more about aphorism 250, about when the practitioner actually realizes he's making a mistake.
Yes.
And you gave it a very interesting application that we were discovering during our show that there were mistakes because the sounds are so bad. So let's just go over that. What?
This was a live test of this aphorism.
Absolutely. Let's just go over that aphorism again, okay?
Excellent.
I'll read it through from Berica. When to the observant practitioner who accurately investigates the state of the disease, it is evident in urgent cases after the lapse of only 6, 8, or 12 hours that he has made a bad selection in the medicine last given, in that the patient's state is growing perceptively, however slightly, worse from hour to hour by the occurrence of new symptoms and sufferings. It is not only allowable for him, but it is his duty to remedy his mistake by the selection and administration of a homeopathic medicine not merely tolerably suitable, but the most appropriate possible for the existing state of the disease. I think that entire paragraph is one sentence.
Yes, one run-on sentence.
One thing the reread of that paragraph actually makes apparent to me, Debbie, is that he talks about how if he refers to an observant practitioner, so there's something that needs to be observed and noticed, and then he says the patient's state is growing perceptibly, however slightly, worse from hour to hour. So that's kind of interesting to me because in an acute, you remember we were saying yesterday about why should it take him so long, 6, 8, or 12 hours, to come to the conclusion that a remedy is not helping. And I think that the answer to that question is in this, that the patient's growing perceptibly, however slightly, worse from hour to hour. The headache is getting slightly worse. The fever may be getting slightly more uncomfortable. But what do you think?
Okay, so he's looking out for any kind of change, whether it is very small. But to mm-hmm. me, it seems like if this is an urgent case, or maybe that's going on to the next aphorism, because in aphorism 250, he is talking about an urgent case, meaning that someone is in dire need of assistance, and the symptoms must be quite vigorous, and therefore, why would he be looking for just a slight improvement? That would be my question.
I don't know that he's looking for a slight improvement, but it's possible. Let's say you see the case, and you think, yeah, this is definitely bryonia, and you give a remedy bryonia, and the patient isn't getting better, and they may be slightly getting worse, you're not sure. So sometimes we think, well, let's give the remedy time to work. Maybe it just needs a little bit more time. Maybe homeopathy isn't as fast as I thought it was. And in this case, in this kind of case, Hahnemann is saying, I think with the urgent case, you should have strong improvement. And if there's no improvement and the patient is getting slightly worse the whole time, which you may need to be an observant homeopath to realize that your patient is getting slightly worse.
Okay.
Then
so
that's a bad remedy.
Right. This really reaffirms what Katya Schutt was saying in her comment on the chat, that a lot of the homeopaths are not aware or they don't perceive that there is an aggravation or that the case is going worse.
Mm-hmm. I think part of what happens also is that as homeopaths, we have to teach parents. We have to teach them what to look for, because very often, if the patient is a child, or even if the patient is a family member, we're very often not actually there. So we're speaking to the patient over the phone, to the patient or the people who are caring for the patient over the phone, and they're not quite sure what to look for. And they may not have seen how magical homeopathy can be when it just helps within seconds.
Okay. This was a good point, because he is saying through this number of hours of observation, as if in the olden days where your doctor came for a home visit and sat with you and was actually sitting there observing the patient may be applying a wet washcloth to their forehead if they had a headache, or what other kind of gentle care that you could give to make a person comfortable, to prop up their pillows or whatever it might be. And you're saying that in today's world, we may be so busy with our own things, or, you know, as a parent, not being able to discern the changes because they live with the child, or mm-hmm. with a family member who they may have their own relationship with and then don't recognize whether there's a change, or for the person themselves not being aware of what to expect, which is very often what happens. And as for the homeopath who is caring for the patient, they are not there 24/7, and they depend upon the patient to call back to tell them how they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think also that as a parent, having given homeopathy to my child, I saw the difference that when I was working with conventional medicine, taking her to the doctor, I basically gave the pills and at the intervals that I was told to give them. And there wasn't any of this check on your child to see if you're going to give more or not. You were told, give it 3 times a day, give it 2 times a day, give it for 4 days. And a parent who's using homeopathy has to watch their child a lot more. There is an increased intensity. It pays off. It's very valuable. But some parents aren't aware of that, and it's a little difficult for them to get used to, I think.
Excellent. What you're saying is the remedies and the individual are in a dynamic relationship, which needs an observer, needs to have mm-hmm. the observation of what is the direction that the movement of the symptoms, the movement of the patient in their whole being, and that is going to be the determining factor of how you proceed, rather than mm-hmm. just on a regular basis give these pills 3 times a day or once a day and then so many days, just mm-hmm. expecting an outcome of cure, but rather that there is something happening within the being that needs mm-hmm. to be observed in order to know what to do next. Mm-hmm. You're part of the process.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, can I suggest we move on to aphorism 251? Because we're going to bring in further reading from the Materia Medica Pura.
Okay. Would you like to do the reading for Boriki?
I'll do the reading from Boriki, but at the same time, I'll just give listeners a heads up. There is a difference, a major difference between Boriki and O'Reilly in aphorism 251. Boriki refers to alternating actions. O'Reilly refers to reciprocal actions. And to my mind, the difference can be very confusing. That's why I'm going to stay with Boriki for this aphorism. But if any of our experts on the Organon, especially those on translations, I know Hans Weidbrecht has written to me about.
Okay.
If anyone has any comment about reciprocal or alternating symptoms, alternating action, then if they can write it on the chat or on the discussion, that would be great. Okay, I'm starting to read to 51. There are some medicines, for example, Ignatia, also Bryonia and Ruff, and sometimes Belladonna, whose power of alternating man's health consists chiefly in alternating actions, a kind of primary action symptoms that are in part opposed to each other. Now, we know this from Ignatia, certainly. We know that Ignatia is unpredictable. Once the reaction could be this way, once the reaction could be that way. Should the practitioner find, I'm continuing, on prescribing one of these, selected on strict homeopathic principles, that no improvement follows, he will, in most cases, soon effect his object by giving, in acute diseases, even within a few hours, a fresh and equally small dose of the same medicine. So first, just to explain the way I understand it, we have with remedies, we have primary action and secondary action. We have like the first shoot and the second shoot. Like with coffee, you have the first is to bring people up hyper, and the second is to bring them down. You have with sugar does the same thing, brings you up and then down. All substances that have some kind of action will very often have primary, secondary. Hahnemann is saying that in the ones where the alternating actions are very strong, so he gives Ignatius the example as a main example, the first reaction that the person may have is to the primary symptom. Say I'm giving Ignatius for hysteria, and a primary symptom within Ignatius could be hysteria, could be relaxation, and then hysteria. Am I going right here? Does this make sense? Let me go back to the coffee example. I'll go back to the coffee example because I like coffee. Let's say I give coffee for insomnia. Okay? Now, coffee, I give it for insomnia. It could give me a first reaction of making me more hyper. And I can't get to sleep. So then maybe it's worthwhile for me to take a second small dose of coffee. And that second dose will take me into coffee's second reaction and will send me to sleep. Now, one area where I've seen this in a case is with opium. That opium can show up in heightened sensitivity or lessened sensitivity. And I was giving opium to someone who was in a case of lessened sensitivity, and it was very helpful. Hahnemann points us to a further description and explanation from the Materia Medica Pura. Shall I read that out, Debbie?
Please do.
Okay. It's a confusing issue. I think everyone has some experience. Many homeopaths have some experience of this type of reaction within their practice. So if anyone has any practical examples of primary action and secondary, it's a very complicated issue. It's not easy to understand straight off. Hahnemann also refers to it earlier in the Organon. Okay, what he says in the Materia Medica Pura, he says, in its employments, Ignatia, this is all in the intro to Ignatia, in its employment it sometimes happens, which is seldom the case with other medicines, that where the first dose has not done what was intended because, for some unknown cause, it first acted on the disease with its opposite symptoms and consequently soon caused an aggravation of the disease in its secondary action, like a palliative remedy, then, without any intermediate medicine having been given in alternation, a second dose of the same dilution can be given with the best curative effect so that the cure is only obtained by the second dose. This is no doubt owing to the directly opposite symptoms, alternating actions, of this remarkable drug. Ignatia is a remarkable drug, of which I shall speak further on. But such cases do not often occur, for as a rule, in an acute disease, the first dose affects all that this medicine can do in a homeopathic way, even if it has been accurately selected according to similarity of symptoms. Okay, it's confusing, right?
Well, there's a lot to deal with there, and when you say the primary action, what specifically does that mean? Because it sounds very much like when a homeopath is expecting an aggravation or an exacerbation of particular symptoms, then they feel as if this is touching the matching resonance going on there. So, but it's not called that. And we talked a little bit about aggravation in the past being we don't really want to see that kind of activity going on always. So it's maybe something that the patient is very much aware of what's happening within their body.
But actually, if we look closer at this aphorism, Hahnemann is saying in the aphorism itself, so should the practitioner find that no improvement follows?
Okay.
So let's look at this aphorism in its connection with 250. 250 says you gave a remedy in an acute and the patient is not getting better and perhaps even slightly getting worse. And it's a mistake.
Okay.
I think 251 comes to qualify 250 and say, however, if you gave Ignatia or another alternating actions one, and no improvement follows, these are Hahnemann's words, then maybe you need to give one more dose before judging.
And when
I
and
think
when
this
you
is really,
that,
yeah.
Yes, it sounded as if he's saying equally minute dose of the same medicine, that it's almost like you're repeating the same dose without changing it a little bit, and we've always said we need to change it. So that is where I'm confused.
No, I think he's talking about the size of the dose, equally small dose, not in terms of the strength of the potency. I mean, he's already stated that you don't give an undisturbed bottle and you succuss the bottle and you don't give from an undisturbed cup. So I don't think he's repeating that, but he's saying if you gave a tiny dose of Ignatia 200 and no improvement follows, then give one more dose of Ignatia 200 before leaving it.
Okay.
Because what you might be seeing is the alternating actions of Ignatia, that first Ignatia isn't helping, and then it will help. If you're pretty sure of the remedy, if you see the remedy there. In 250, he's saying, you've given the remedy and your patient is getting slightly worse, it's probably a bad one. But in 251, he's saying, accept Ignatia.
Okay.
Or similar.
So he's pointing out specific types of remedies that have this alternating action, but not in general?
I think he's pointing out these specific remedies, and he's also giving an exception to 250. If you think your patient might be getting slightly worse, you're not sure, he's certainly not getting better. If what you gave is Ignatia or similar, give it one more dose before you decide. It's a bit like us staying on online yesterday. If we see that the quality of the sound is not getting better and getting slightly worse.
Yes.
But we really felt it was good for us. So we tried another little dose of radio show.
Yes.
And then realized that we had to abandon ship.
Uh-huh. So then we had to make a new mode of action here, which we're trying. But yes. Is there anything more that we can take from 240, 250 and 251
combined? I'm thinking of jumping to 252 because they really are a trio. 250 is saying the patient isn't getting better and maybe even slightly getting worse, or majorly getting worse, but slightly. And it's the slight changes in situation that are the hardest for us to deal with, because slightly worse, slightly better, what do we do? So he says, if the patient is getting slightly worse in 250, it's a bad choice, find something better. In 251, if the patient doesn't seem to be getting worse, but there's no improvement, nothing really seems to be happening, and you gave Ignatia or Bryonia or Rust or maybe Belladonna even, give another dose. And in 252, he's saying, if nothing happens, you got to check. Now, let's see what he says. But should we find during the employment of the other medicines in chronic psoriatic diseases that the best selected homeopathic antipsoriatic medicine in the suitable minutest dose does not affect an improvement? This is a sure sign that the cause that keeps up the disease still persists, and that there is some circumstance in the mode of life of the patient or in the situation in which he is placed, that must be removed in order that a permanent cure may ensue. So here, if you gave the medicine, it was the best choice. It suited perfectly. It was a small dose. And it did, we say, bupkis. Nothing. Nada. Gurnished. This is a sure sign that the cause that keeps up the disease is still there. Something is revving up this disease. It could be a mother-in-law, it could be a job, it could be damp, it could be hand soap, it could be anything. And this is where we put on our Sherlock Holmes hats and get out our pipes and smoke this out.
It seems as if now in 252 he's introducing miasmic or chronic disease, and this is something in O'Reilly, how it's written quite a bit differently from what you just read in the other interpretation or translation. Do you want it read?
The psoric and antipsoric, as written in 252, are in brackets.
Okay.
So this may be Berica's way of saying chronic and homeopathic. And it's possible that Berica felt here that this aphorism related specifically to diseases within the psoric miasm.
Okay.
I think this also is something would be interesting to know what the linguists on HWC think about this.
We'll have to
about
encourage
the differences.
Those folks to, yeah, we'll have to encourage. I see Hans is online now. Maybe he's listening. I don't know. But we could always use some interpreters to find out what precisely Hahnemann was saying. Do you want Riley read? Or do we have time for that? Or do you want to go further?
No, I don't. I think that we should stop now in terms of the aphorisms because we've got a trio of aphorisms that presents certain pictures of if patient is getting slightly worse, find a new medicine that's much better. If nothing is happening, if you've given Ignatia or Breonio similar, give one more dose before abandoning ship. If the remedy is perfect and brilliant and we are really convinced that we gave the best remedy for the case and nothing is happening, see if something is antidoting. At this point also, I'd like to refer people to an article. There's an article on antidoting. I'll write a note on the blog, which I think is excellent, because the whole issue of antidoting is an interesting one. Especially in how the patient relates to the homeopath. Because when the homeopath gives, in my experience, if the homeopath gives a ton of directions to the patients of things he mustn't have, then the patient won't tell the homeopath that he did something naughty, right?
Uh-huh.
So the homeopath won't own up that he drank a real nice cappuccino immediately after taking the remedy.
Uh-huh.
And you'll never know. And this is especially in chronic. And here we see this aphorism relates more to chronic, whereas 250 and 251 related more to acute.
I see. And on 252, the general statement says that in chronic cases that do not improve with homeopathic treatment, look for an obstacle to cure. So this might be the ongoing behavior or the ongoing family relationship or whatever is long-term for the person that they may not even recognize or realize, as you said, the story about the person who was using a particular kind of soap that was causing an obstacle to cure. So there are many places that we can look for these obstacles, and we can't always remove them all, can we?
I think we can't. It would be interesting to ask people, though, what strangest obstacles to cure they've come up against in practice, because there are some things it would never have occurred to me to ask someone about hand soap. I mean, it did occur to me, but it took a while.
We are at 1 minute to the end of the show. And
we'll
keep our time very well today. And so we have a triad, and tomorrow we're going on?
We'll go on. We'll go on to 253.
Okay. I really thank you for signing on today, and I hope more people listen and write on the comments on to both of our blogs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listening to Who's Reading the Organon?
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.